Welcome to DigiCode, the podcast where innovators can discuss and contemplate the innovations of tomorrow. I'm your host, Tarun Nanapati, and today we're going to be talking about vibe coding. Vibe coding has taken the world by storm ever since that first tweet from Andre Karpathy that coined the term vibe coding. A level beyond AI-assisted coding, vibe coding is the true fusion of generative AI and natural language to the point where anyone can code up anything using plain English. Imagine a consultant writing a scraper script to help them go and collect data, but never knowing how to code. Imagine an artist who's vibe coding up a website to go and showcase their art to the world. There's a promise of a new world where anyone can vibe code anything, and that gives such immense power to the common man to do amazing things. But there's risks to it. Recently, there have been stories of people who've been vibe coding applications and releasing it into public only to have it hacked and destroyed in a matter of seconds. People are releasing features that are breaking in seconds because they've not been properly tested in vibe coding. So where is the balance? How do we properly do vibe coding? And what are the true implications for tomorrow? To explore this, I'm talking to Georgi Kobayatse, a principal software engineer at Singularity, who has also written articles on the dev platform about software architecture, engineering, and recently, vibe coding. So without further ado, let's DigiCode. Welcome to DigiCode, and so happy to have you here. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, Georgi, and just a little bit about, you know, what you do, and then how you kind of got interested in software engineering.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. I mean, actually, it's the first time for me in podcast, and this is exciting, and I'm ready to go, and I'm kind of nervous, to be honest. A little bit, but yeah. So about me, I'm Georgi. I'm a principal software engineer, over 8 years of experience in industry. And right now I work in gaming domain. Okay. And I'm not exactly a game developer. I am a backend software engineer, and I provide backend services for different kinds of games to facilitate its gameplay and whatnot. So that's pretty much about me, and I'm just excited about new advancements of technology and everything like that.
That's amazing. So, you know, coming to the topic of today, this episode is interesting because it's kind of really brings together people who have never tried coding before. A lot of people who are like me who don't really, you know, dabble into the technical side, and people who are very much, you know, software engineers, people who are very technical. So for the general audience, how would you define vibe coding?
That's a great question, and it's so hard to explain without technical terms, but I'll try my best. So,
sure.
First of all, I want to mention that I am all in into AI, because if you are not using AI as a software engineer, you are just damaging your productivity, because you can be so much more productive and efficient by using AI tools, and you should absolutely use it whenever you need it, of course. So now about vibe coding. To me, vibe coding, the definition of vibe coding is talking to machine learning models to achieve something, to create some product or maybe some feature even. And if I were to name this concept myself, I would call it something like explanatory design session, which doesn't sound anywhere near as cool as vibe coding, of course, but it's more realistic in my opinion.
Sure. And how would you differentiate it from AI-assisted coding? Would you say they're the same thing, or would you say that they're different?
I have four different types created myself, which differ by the involvement of AI and the human being. So how much work is done by human being and how much work is done by AI. So
yeah.
Those types are, first is fully manual coding, which I don't think is quite common anymore because right now everyone uses AI, at least who I know. Everyone uses AI every single day because it makes you so much more productive. And fully manual coding is something from the past, I think. Mm. And it's quite makes sense, right? In this kind of coding style, you program everything and you don't use AI. You might use, for instance, Google or Stack Overflow or something like that. But that's from the past. Second one is AI-assisted coding, which means that you are the main actor, main developer in the whole process, and AI is just your co-pilot. So imagine you are a pilot of, Boeing 777. You sit on the left side and you hold the yoke, and you just decide to how to operate your aircraft, right? Uh-huh. But the copilot just helps you to do the things you decide to do. This is, I think, the most optimal and the most productive way of working. The third one is AI assisting coding. Uh-huh. Which means that you kind of swap places, trade places with AI. So you become a co-pilot and AI becomes the main pilot, let's say like that. So you trust AI to generate something, but you are not involved in coding. I mean, you have a minimal involvement. Like you review the code, if necessary, you make changes, and that's a different style of coding. And that's not vibe coding yet. What
okay.
Vibe coding is the fourth category in which you don't code anything. Like you might don't know coding at all and programming basics even. You just tell AI, hey, can I build a NASCAR game, for instance? And AI just codes it out for you. And you don't even review the code. And that's, I don't know, some people like it, some people dislike it, but it still needs to be tested.
Yeah. Okay, that makes perfect sense. And I think it's a very interesting topic, right? Because there's a lot of... There's a lot of people who are just going to vibe coding and saying it's like the future. We don't have to, you know, write actual like Python lines or Java lines anymore because it's just all natural language, right? We're just talking to the computer and writing it. But you know, there's also the other side of people who I've seen in my research that, you know, and these are experienced software engineers who are coming and saying, hey, like, it's not just, you can't just go in and code without really knowing how to code. And so I'm kind of stuck between this vision of, you know, being able to code without, like, by just saying it, right? To the point where, you know, anyone, like a layman who's a, like, a, let's say a plumber who's building like a tiny robot can just go to ChatGPT and just ask it to write the crow code or the brain of that robot. Or to like a designer, a graphic designer who just wants to, like, you know, write a few, you know, lines of English and just code up a website. All the way to like a very experienced software engineer who's able to use this to really advance their own code workflow. But to that extent, I guess what part of this would you say is the vibe? Because I know you wrote a whole article about this, right? Could you speak a little bit about kind of your overall stance on vibe coding and what you feel its impacts are on society as it's going today?
Okay, that's a deep question, and I'll try to answer as best as possible.
Sure.
So. Let's start with negative aspects of vibe coding and leave positives for the end. So possible problems that I see in vibe coding is that because it's not coding and you are not involved in coding as a software engineer, that takes a lot of abilities from you. For instance, if you are not familiar with the coding concepts and also security or scalability or performance and whatnot, it's going to be really tough to build a software using AI that is capable of doing all of those things well. And what I mean by that, we've had a lot of cases. I mean, you might also heard of some cases where the people created some kind of software which went live, and a couple of days later, it had so many security issues that the whole thing just failed. So that's a great example what vibe coding can cause if the security risks aren't addressed appropriately. So, and we live in not really perfect world, and there are people who will exploit every weakness of your system, especially if your business is taking off and making some money, or maybe even if not, they will just do it for fun. And these things happen every single day, and we should be aware of that. When you are a experienced software engineer, you consider these risks and you address them. So you need to know how to do it right. And if you're not trained, you're not gonna know how to do it. Of course, AI will suggest something, but it's not necessarily true. And from developer's perspective, I mean, the technical people's perspective, telling AI what to do in general is a little bit boring, to be honest. I mean, it can be fun, like a couple of times, but in general, we love coding. We love designing systems ourselves and getting the enjoyment out of creating something by our hands. It's pretty bad to maintain a software that is written by AI, because AI can write a software in a very inefficient way. And after that, when you have to maintain it, it can be really hard to do it, because you don't know why that design choice was used. And also, you don't know why that particular architecture was used and things like that. There are some issues with dependencies as well. Like, for instance, AI can suggest frameworks, libraries, and technologies that might not be fully suitable for the context. You are the one who should be understanding the context, not the AI. So if AI suggests something, it might be technically true, and it almost always is, but in the particular context, it might not be too good. And last but not least, we have so many high-level languages right now, like C#, Java, and things like that, like Python as well, as you mentioned. And they are already so abstracted compared to languages like C, for instance, which is a very low-level language. And you don't even have to worry too much about like memory allocation, garbage collection, and things like that. But this abstraction is a precise abstraction, let's say strict to be honest, because when you write the same code twice, doesn't matter how many times you run it, it outputs the same result. And say it, for instance, C# generates the same intermediate language code, which is then translated by the machine code, every single time you run it. But if you look at the vibe coding stuff, you might get different results on the same prompt every single time. And this is an abstraction that's not precise and way less predictable. And that's the big issue to my perspective.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Georgie. And I think so much of what you said just resonated with me. And it's probably because, so I'll tell you a little bit about, you know, where I'm coming from and my perspective and all of this, right? And it's essentially that, you know, I come from a non-coding background. I've tried to code and I think the biggest challenge for me has always been debugging. Cause I cannot, I've taken a bunch of courses and I sit there and as soon as I hit like an attribute error or like some sort of like, you know, red thing comes up on my computer, I'm just like, this is so tough. And I'll go try to find where that is. And it ends up being like, I missed a semicolon or like I missed an indent. And then I'm like, you know, this is crazy for the amount of time I'm put in. But I understand from, you know, the software engineer side, and I think there's a certain enjoyment that, you know, software engineers, a lot of my friends I talk to, look at this more as like, you know, I'm trying to solve a puzzle, right? As you said in the beginning, that like, you know, when I come to a problem or when I see a problem, I need to figure out how I can go and solve this. And that's the enjoyment I get in doing this profession. And I really respect it. I think there's a lot of people who would love the benefits of coding, you know, where I can create certain applications, create software that can do stuff for me, but not really want to go through, you know, all the hassle of trying to figure out these puzzles and really learning this side. And I think I'm one of them, right? So I tried out vibe coding and I tried building out, you know, I was working on like a LinkedIn scraper kind of tool that I use a lot in my work. And I was trying to see, okay, can I do this, you know, just scrape LinkedIn. And initially it worked great. It logged into LinkedIn. It was using Selenium. And you know, it clicked a bunch of buttons and I was like, okay, this is working perfectly. And then I was like, okay, now I need to like search a little bit more. I need to add a little bit more functionality. And then suddenly I think LinkedIn's anti-bot detection just started, you know, spasming. And you know, it locked me out. And then I was working with, you know, the LLM to try to do a little bit more, say like, hey, this is what happened. Can you do workarounds? And it tried many different strategies, but I guess, you know, the vibe coder is not as good as an actual engineer who's kind of building this out. And I just didn't really understand any of the code that I was building out, but more so just, okay, I'm just, you know, going with the flow, going with the vibe and just trying to figure out how to, you know, bypass these issues, these problems, by just using code. And so I guess I kind of just want to decode how I fix these kinds of things. And maybe in your vibe coding or your, you know, AI assisted, coding workflow, how did you come across these things? And what is the solution?
Sure. So first of all, I will start, mentioning the good things that comes with vibe coding and why it still has a place in software engineering. And there are some good things that can be done by vibe coding, like you mentioned, for instance, your case. And also, I see a lot of areas where vibe coding can be pretty useful, to be honest. For instance, we as a software engineers write a lot of code, right? And we need to have some kind of initial setup for our code. Like boilerplate code, you might have heard of this term. Mm-hmm. This is the code which is really repetitive and you just write it all the time. And for instance, when you set up a new application project, you just have to write it over and over again and things like that. So I think that vibe coding can be useful in that regard to automate this stuff. Like for instance, generating the boilerplate code, the initial code for you, to then just start coding of the features you want to develop, right?
Sure.
It might not be applicable all the time, but still, it can be a really good idea to use vibe coding for it. Also, these project managers and other people who are not technical have pretty hard time explaining developers what to build and what to implement. And they sometimes even have a hard time understanding clients' requirements, especially if you are like inexperienced project manager, it's going to be really hard to understand developers' perspective. So what I'm suggesting to this kind of people is to use vibe coding to generate demo projects, to show these demo projects to clients to clarify the features and functionality they want. And it will be it will give you the full picture what to build, right? And it won't take too long. And also, they can use the same demo project to show this to the engineers so that they can also get the idea what the project managers want. So they will have all the information and they will just try to implement it as well as possible. And I see a lot of potential in that regard in vibe coding. And last but not least, I think vibe coding can be excellent tool for dipping toes in creating products. I mean, I know many people who want to be a software engineer, but don't really understand the power of the software engineering. So what I suggest them is to ask AI what AI can build. Like it can be like Claude, it can be GPT or any of those models, and try to generate the code based on those requirements and those ideas.
Absolutely, George. No, you couldn't have said it better, man. I think that last part is really what I want to focus on, right? Is because I think there's a lot of benefit when you're talking about, you know, being able to the explainability that comes with using AI, and it's really beneficial not just to like you know to project managers or people who are non-technical who you're showing a product to and saying hey are these features right, but also people who just want to start building but don't really know how right. I think we're in an age where you know it becomes so much easier to learn how to code because there is literally your personal teacher like right next to you, right. And whatever project you're working on, you don't have to go through stacks and stacks of, you know, Stack Overflow. And it's just you have, you know, a resource that you can use to just ask questions rather than just saying, hey, write me a thing. You're asking, why are you writing like this? And you really start to really understand. So I guess to that extent, for people who are trying to really get into learning how to code, for people who are trying to, who've never touched code before, or people who are not really efficient with it, how do you use ChatGPT or Cursor or Claude Code to really understand how can I code? How can I learn to code?
Great questions. First, if you just want to understand the possibilities and you are not going to build anything serious or something that will be applicable in terms of commercial value, I think you cannot go wrong with that. You can ask anything, like build F1 game or build something, so some kind of system, like for instance a calendar where I can manage my own events on or something like that. But if you are trying to build something that will earn some money or maybe go to production or do something serious, that's where you wanna take a step back and think about the possible risks and possible scenarios that can play out. So what I would suggest is to, before you even start coding, just take a week to understand coding practices, to understand mm-hmm. how systems work in general,
okay,
how deployments work, what are the best practices, what is billing, and also how to handle security in a way that I don't have too many vulnerabilities in my code.
Hmm.
You should take some time to understand these things, because if you do something without knowing these possible risks, you know, AI is not going to handle it well, because AI always follows the happy path, which is not necessarily the correct path all the time.
Yeah.
And just understand basics of coding, understand how security works, how to implement security in a way that you are safe from attacks and any kinds of vulnerabilities. And right after that, you can start slowly adding new features, new security, security features as well, and things like that.
Sorry to interrupt. Where do I learn the stuff that you're talking about? Whether it's, you know, implementing security or security best practices, is it just prompting ChatGPT, or are there resources that you use to learn these?
You can use ChatGPT, for instance, to learn this kind of things, but I'm not sure if it's going to be enough, because maybe you can also talk to someone who is familiar with this kind of things, like a friend or colleague who is an experienced software engineer, and just understand what can go wrong so that you have some kind of insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. And then, yes, please continue with, you know, you said slowly coding and slowly going through.
Yeah, so why I mentioned slowly, that's because if you go too fast, things can go wrong pretty fast. And one of my connections on Dev2 platform where I blog actually described one specific scenario when almost everything went wrong after just leaving Copilot on its own for like 10 minutes. And she actually wrote a great article about that. What she was mentioning is that you should always be very specific how you configure your Copilot, because if you just unleash your Copilot, it's gonna do things that you don't even expect. Like, for instance, you need to change something in one feature, and it might change other things in other parts of the code, which is not really relevant. And also make new branches, create new problems, and even more problems that you had before. And I also have this kind of example myself. So there is one specific file called project template.json, and it's just a configuration file. It's nothing fancy. So I asked ChatGPT about that because I wanted to solve it quickly, and I thought it would be able to solve it in one prompt, and it generated something even bigger JSON, and I just copied and pasted it. Yeah. I checked it. It didn't work. Then I explained even better what I wanted and what not, and it generated even bigger JSON this time.
Yeah.
It didn't work. And I had so many repetitions, and finally I found a solution in one of the GitHub issues comment sections.
Yeah.
And once I applied it, it was like working like a charm. Yeah. And the solution was way simpler than I thought. So the point I want to make is that if I vibe coded the whole thing, I would end up like 5 times bigger JSON without any result. And that's where things can go wrong. So if AI isn't able to find the solution, it just gives you random solutions. So you can try it, but you don't have guarantee that it will work. That's the problem, I think.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So I guess there's one last question, and this is kind of, you know, one that I keep hearing when I'm talking to people on the road, you know, just, you know, I'm going by and I think the market's all like, you know, software engineers are, you know, dying out. Like it's a job, all those jobs are going away. You know, what, maybe before this episode, I probably believed that, but, you know, after, you know, talking with you, after really understanding, you know, doing my own research on how much, you know, AI can actually replace software engineers, I really don't know, because I think there's a value to experience, there's a value to, you know, really understanding how the code works, how architecture works, and stuff like that. So I'm going to pose that question to you. Do you think that software engineers are going to get replaced, or what how do you think that job is going to change?
Yeah, so I think that's the best question and also the most controversial questions as well. So, this is also a tough question, to be honest. And I'll try to answer as well as I can. So,
sure.
To be honest, I don't believe that software engineers will become obsolete because... Okay. You know, software engineering isn't just coding. And I repeat it over and over and over again. It's problem solving, right? Yeah. And problems are so diverse. I just have one question for you.
Sure.
Personally, which is easier for you? Like beating a champion, chess champion, grandmaster, or driving a car? To work.
Driving a car to work.
Of course. No brainer, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So then why is it so that AI is so good at beating those champions? I mean, everyone has the application in their pockets, in their smartphones, that can easily defeat the champion, but AI still cannot drive a car perfectly. Just like, I mean, there are many bad drivers out there, but in average, human being is still better driver than AI, even though driving a car is way easier than beating a chess grandmaster.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Why do you think it's like that? What's your opinion about that?
Well, I mean, Tesla is making strides and so is Waymo, but I would still say that we've cracked, you know, beating a grandmaster in probably what, 1970 something. And then we're just now getting to, you know, trying to be able to drive. I think it's to that extent, there's certain types of problems, and certain adaptability and certain ways to, you know, solve problems which we as humans know, because that's the way, you know, our mind has developed, right? I'm a big fan of, I mean, since you're posing this question to me, I'm a big fan of Yuval Noah Harari, who wrote Sapiens. And in it, he talks about how we as a species have really, you know, been able to advance because of, one, we know how to work with others, but two, we know how to solve problems when they come up, no matter, you know, what happens through our, you know, power of imagination or through our power of, you know, trying to, or hope, you know, there are so many things that drive us to be able to solve certain problems, which AI or, you know, a rule-based, you know, program cannot solve because it can't think outside its box.
Sure.
But, you know, I don't know if that's the answer, but, you know, what do you think, George?
Yeah, that's where I'm going now with my answer. So thing is, if you look at chess, it has strict rules. I mean, there are so many different combinations in chess, almost infinite, but it's not really infinite, is it? So that's why AI is good at it. because it can calculate maybe most or maybe even all of the combinations that can be applied during the chess game and still beat the grandmaster. But when it comes to things like real-life things, like, for instance, driving a car or flying a plane or something like that, there really can be infinite number of different case scenarios. And, for instance, when you drive a car and you see in the car in front doing something unusual, you can actually tell that if you're an experienced driver that there is something wrong with it. Maybe the taillights aren't working, maybe the brake lights are out of order or something like that. And you apply your experience to be as safe as possible. And that comes from the human experience. So my point is AI can be perfect at things that human beings are bad, pretty bad. And other way around, human beings can be really good at things that AI cannot do at this moment. I'm sure we'll have AI driving cars and cabs and things like that in the future, but right now it's the reality. So to return to the question, what will change? I think software engineering isn't going anywhere because, as I explained based on this example, software engineering is a problem solving, and in real situations you have infinite number of cases and scenarios. And I worked in so many companies and so many domains, and set of problems that I received to solve are almost never the same. So you always need to adjust, adapt, and find some kind of problem. And that's where the software engineers can shine. I think a good thing about invention, this kind of inventions and technological advancements, is that it reduces repetitive work.
Absolutely.
And the pure problem-solving part will still remain to the software engineers, and maybe even more than it is now. And this area will be emphasized so much that I think that's going to be even better so for software engineers. So I think that's a great time to become one, to be honest. If someone's uncertain whether or not it's a good idea to start working on their software engineering skills, I'm sure you will need it. So go for it if you think that it's for you. As developers, we always review our code.
Absolutely.
That's a great skill, which is really underrated skill, to be honest. Other than that, we have communication skills, which is also really important, because you need to be a problem solver, and without good communication skills, you cannot be one. Also, critical thinking, because when AI generates something for you, you need to be as critical as possible. And even if you receive something to review from other peer developer, you need to look at the code and be critical. Also, understanding the big picture, because most of the developers that I've known, they have quite a hard time understanding the big picture. And many are just focused on writing code, which is not really good idea to do, because you are a problem solver at first, and then you are a coder. You don't code until you solve the problem, and you don't have a concept how you should implement something. And this is really important to understand, because at some point AI will do coding and you will just be there to review it and make decisions. So you gotta be ready for that. And last but not least is understanding how AI works in general, because if you know insights and you know how it works in the background, you have superpowers compared to others. So you can generate more optimal and effective prompts, and you can be 10x productive when writing some software. So just focus on those skills and you should be fine. That's how I think right now. It might be wrong, I'm not sure, but I guess time will tell.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Georgie. I really think this whole conversation, I have a lot to reflect on and a lot to just take from, you know, what you've said, because I myself am trying to, you know, improve on many of these things and get the superpowers that you're talking about. So absolutely. Just learned a lot from this we're looking forward to you know, reading more of your articles on dev just learning a lot more. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was an honor to be your guest.
Oh, that's
and
so sweet.
Just grateful. It was my first appearance at podcast, so it was great experience, and thank you.
Thank you so much. Wishing many more.
Thanks.
Thank you. Reflecting on the conversation, I think we're still a little bit further away from being able to tell Jarvis to go code something up and have it be error-free. I think there's still considerations to be made with regards to security, efficiency, and intuitiveness. That said, there's a lot of money flowing into vibe coding startups. The three most recent unicorns have been Lovable, which is valued at $1.8 billion, Cognition AI, which is valued at $4 billion, and AnySphere, which makes Cursor, which is valued at nearly $10 billion. There's a lot of money clearly flowing into making this vibe coding future a reality. But I think what that means for us, the common person, is that we need to avidly prepare ourselves and educate ourselves in how to do software engineering from the basics of, you know, security, from being able to code intuitively, so that when these tools become more advanced, we're able to take on its full potential and very much utilize it to solve our own problems. So with that, thank you so much for listening, and see you soon.